I spend a lot of my time explaining and over-explaining situations that he finds himself in. What I've noticed, though, is that like if you don't strip a child of their confidence, they're pretty good at understanding that the world is not a perfect place and that they're going to have to anchor themselves to that North Star, regardless of what influences are, you know, kind of hitting them and from where.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to The Brave Table. I'm your host, Dr. Neetha, and this is your destination, your oasis for being all things just a little bit more brave, brave in your actions, in your relationships, and in your life. And today, if you are new, I just want to say welcome. You have come to the right place. This is your destination to be all things just a little bit more brave. And my guest today has truly done that. She's amassed over 1 million humans deeply invested in her transformational work. She is a new thought leader and a best-selling author who's an expert in human development and relationships with a following of over 2 million on all social media platforms. She has over a decade of experience working with people from all walks of life with a mission to reduce human suffering. This queen, this mother, this mama bear, and baddie is none other than the amazing Teal Swan. Today, she's also become an international speaker, having facilitated retreats and life-changing workshops in the large venues worldwide. Teal was ranked 15th on the Watkins Most Spiritually Influential Living People in 2023. In this conversation, today's episode, we talk about ancestral healing, we talk about relationships, we talk about self-love, and we talk about gender dynamics. Now, if you've been a fan and you're here because you love Teal Swan, this is not your typical Teal Swan episode. We get into the bravery and we go in, and she is such a beautiful powerhouse light. You are just going to fall in love with her and get so much value out of this. And for those of you who are navigating relationships solo or healing from a breakup or divorce, or maybe just rekindling what it means to be in motherhood as well, this episode is for you. So without further ado, please welcome Teal Swan on The Brave Table this week. Life's moments come with their ups and downs, but every experience is an opportunity for growth and connection. Introducing our very popular That Sucked, Now What? Specifically crafted 44-prompt conversation card deck and our 52-card deck of affirmation cards designed to transform your relationships with brave conversations and interactions in your life. Imagine peeling back the layers of everyday conversations to reveal deeper, more meaningful connections. Our conversation cards are your key to unlocking stories, laughter, and understanding among friends, family, or even just going a little bit deeper. And now, with our affirmation cards, start every day with a positive nudge. 52 powerful affirmations to remind you of your boldness, your unapologetic resilience, and your worth. A simple practice that can dramatically shift and change your perspective and uplift your spirit in your day-to-day. Now, these are not just cards. They are gateways to deeper self-growth and self-understanding and brave conversations. Whether it is for yourself or a thoughtful gift, head over to thatsuckednowwhat.com. That is thatsuckednowwhat.com and grab your bundle today. Now back to the show. Hi.
Hello.
You are quite the big deal. And I got to know about your work, I want to say, probably when I came to Austin, actually 3 years ago, we first landed, and I was pregnant with my second. And there was a practitioner, a body worker, who was working on me. And I think I was going through a very just like, we had just moved and we were just talking about this right before we started taping of kind of the many different places that we were. But I had a two-year-old and then I was pregnant with our second. And then it was like during COVID and then your name kept popping up. And my body worker, who I absolutely loved, she had just started diving deeply into your work. And it was like every session, your name would keep popping up and popping up. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I love how divine timing has led us to this very moment. And so as you've amassed, you know, 2 million people who are avid fans of you, and I feel like we started this show 2 years ago to have these brave conversations around emotions and the work. And I want to start by asking, what are you braving?
Oh gosh.
Right now in this season of life.
Backlash. Mm. Like lots and lots and lots of backlash.
In what way?
I mean, I've got a lot of people who want me gone. And what's frustrating is that people who love you are a lot less loud and they definitely demand a lot less attention. So it turns out that it feels disproportionate, you know. You may have millions and millions of people who just love you, but they're loving you, watching you at like 3 o'clock in the morning secretly and telling their friends. I mean, I got a lot of people who are just terrified to even share my videos by virtue of being associated with me. So The voices that have been the loudest have been the ones where, you know, it's an active attempt at takedown. Mm. And it's difficult because you're like, well, what am I? It kind of feels like you're forcing yourself on the world, which is the opposite of why I got into this work.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of go back a little bit. And what was that impetus that kind of led you to kind of dive deeper into trauma and emotional release? And you've written so many books. I love the book, The Anatomy of Loneliness, which I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best title ever.
So you want to go even back before I decided to do this work?
As back as you want to go.
Well, I guess my journey into these types of subjects definitely revolved around personal healing first and foremost, because I had overcome a childhood of extreme levels of abuse. And when I entered into the space of healing in general, which was mainstream psychology, when I popped out of everything, nobody had a good answer. Mm-hmm. It was so depressing. It was like the prognosis was terrible. Nobody had answers. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to figure this out with no roadmap, really. And to do that, I was going to have to rely on a lot of my own innate gifts, which I was running away from, of course.
Yep. As we do.
Yeah. So I leaned into those gifts/curses. We can get into that later. And I went in the direction of accessing spiritual dimensions for a lot of this information, which is something that's not only easy for me to do, I had very little control over it growing up. And I think that we take for granted our own innate talents and gifts. Mm-hmm. No matter where it is in the world and who I'm working with, I notice this trend where it's like, you know, if somebody's got this incredible penchant for organization, for example, they don't really even recognize that until they've been in an environment that reflects it strongly enough. So when I started leaning back into these, you know, abilities to see other dimensional fields and things like that, it was starting to shock me how much people didn't know that was just standard. Mm. I mean, not an effort for me. There's anything where I'm like, what color is the table? You'd be able to tell me in 30 seconds, right? What if I was like, no way, that just changed my whole life. And that was the reaction that I was starting to get was, you know, this information that I took for granted my whole life was something that could change somebody's life for the positive so fast that I started getting real frustrated by the fact that this information was not something which was out there to the greater public. And I had acute awareness that the majority of people cannot afford, you know, $100+ session with anyone.
Right.
So I was like, how do I get this out? How do I get this out? Where do I put this stuff? And it was back in the days when YouTube was just like a place for party tricks. I don't know if you remember yes. All the way back then. That kind of dates me, doesn't it?
Oh my gosh.
All the way back when it was like, oh, look what our cousin just posted on YouTube. It's like him doing a cinnamon test. I don't know if you remember that one where they like take a tablespoon of cinnamon and try not to die. But it was a real risk at the time because nobody was really doing information content on there yet. So I was toying with whether or not people would even be interested in that or whether it was like, oh, come on, I just got out of college. I don't want to hear more crap. I came on here to have fun. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wing it because at least even for my clients, I can be like, look, I've already answered that in like a lot of detail, more than I can do in one session. Like, here it is, bam. You know, and I was thinking about homeless people a lot because of the lack of resources and noticed that there was a library that they could go into. So I was first interested in getting books in that library, but then I saw that they were using the computers and I'm like, okay, I can put these videos there and then they can see them for free. And I'm not kidding you, it was like wildfire.
Oh, of course. I mean, you are a very... My team was doing so much research on you and they're like, oh my goodness, yes. Well, and I think that it's kind of bringing up two different tangents I want to go into because what I love so much about your work and how honestly it's in our community, we have a lot of really strong, powerful women, which I feel like you talk about, you know, the masculine and the feminine quite a bit. Yeah. And
I also shared with you before we started taping, you know, I kind of left my first marriage and then kind of went through this whole evolution and finding myself. And I feel like a lot of people who are listening and maybe even watching this on YouTube is thinking to themselves, what do I want in a man now? What am I looking for in a man now? Who do I need to be to find that person? And what is my relationship with my femininity? Yeah. So can we unpack all of that?
Oh, yeah. This could take us quite a while. Well, right now, humanity in general, especially in the younger generations, millennial and below, are redefining relationship. So we've been, in the older generations, born into this template, and that template no longer fits with society. So we've evolved essentially out of what worked. So a lot of people are confused as to why that template doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work because you changed all the things that made it work. Did it really work? You know, we are asking those types of questions. So we're at the drawing boards with what we want relationships to look like. And it's natural that if so much of the structure of our relationships was dependent upon genders, then if we're uprooting the entire structure of relationships in general, we are also uprooting our relationship to our genders.
And what is that role as a modern female now navigating through this?
Oh, right now it's a nightmare. Right now, I really honestly feel like it's a nightmare for men too, but I really do wish that I could convey that right now is not a fun time to be living as a modern female. It's not going to be.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, because we aren't quite transitioned out of the old expectations, stereotypes, biases, and yet we're in this new territory. It was interesting because I was just reading this study this morning. Mm. Popped up out of nowhere, you know.
Right.
Of course, because I was coming here, but it popped across, you know, my feed, this story about a research that they were doing. It was reported on NPR about the fact that, you know, women are now, if you compare them to men, they're making nearly the same amount of money, and yet the responsibilities for the household are still completely unequal in terms of what is expected and required and is done by them, which is something that I definitely see echoed no matter where I go in the modern world. It's this frustration from women emanating of, I guess I have to do everything now.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, there's the whole idea of, you know, the mom guilt.
Oh, yeah.
Well, which we'll dive into in a moment. But even before that, because I remember there was, and I just posted something even on my IG maybe a couple days ago around me marrying myself, actually, in Bali, did the whole thing. This was 9 years ago after my divorce. And it was my commitment to me. And it was very much like, I'm going to just take care of me and not depend on a guy. And it was just, and of course I got this like a lot of backlash, but it was kind of to really point or highlight that, you know, once you start committing to you as a former people pleaser, as somebody who always put other people's needs first, this was my commitment to myself. And then I was able to kind of find my now co-pilot. But even in that took a lot of, what's this new balancing role and this balancing act? Because while I'm so feminine in my own right, I felt like there was a lot of the masculine that I was also carrying. So can you speak to that?
Yeah, I don't even know where to dive in. I mean, the reality is we still live in a world that is built by men for men. So naturally, whenever a woman steps into this type of society, and especially steps into a competitive workplace environment within the society, we could even say providing for oneself is doing that. Regardless of how you're doing that, you compensate essentially with a masculine shield. You compensate by overdeveloping masculine traits and qualities. And so I don't know a single woman who's working, quote unquote, that isn't in this position. That means there has to be a lot of focus, conscious focus, on developing femininity. And something I don't think most women want to swallow is that there are feminine traits which cannot exist outside of a masculine container. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to hear that, right? It makes you feel powerless, but there are a great many traits that do not exist without a container for the feminine. So if you're lacking that and society is not really providing that outside the context of a relationship, which it used to, then you're forced to bring forth the elements of feminine that do not need a container to exist. But there's no way you're going to feel as good in your body. So,
because then you try to do it all. And what are some of the repercussions of that?
We're about to see a fertility crisis on a level which most people could not fathom. And if a fertility crisis wasn't bad enough, there's a great many people who are just going to be flat out making the decision, why the hell would I have children? On top of that, you're going to see a lot of cancers in women, a lot of breast cancers. You're going to be seeing musculoskeletal issues because of the armoring that goes on in a female's body.
And let's unpack the cancers in women, because obviously for the audience, I mean, they may not know why that may be a emotional manifestation.
Okay, let's talk about cancer. Cancer is an interesting internal antagonist, because cancer, you can think of this as a part of self that is so sick of you doing things in a specific way that aren't working or isn't working, that it essentially plays an internal zero-sum game and says, change or die. It's basically up to you. I've been telling you I don't like this. So cancer is actually a very, very powerful ally. But most people, of course, don't see it that way. And it's not a surprise that it doesn't feel that way, because when you really realize what it is that cancer itself is trying to get you to change about your life and your lifestyle specifically, you'll understand why it's so difficult for people to overcome cancer. Because it usually comes up against almost like the holy grail of the way you operate in life. And with women specifically, a lot of that is around self-sacrifice, which is the relationship to the breasts. Of course, this coincides with the inundation in our environment and within society of, you know, just the incredible lack of health with which we have designed things. You know, we've got pesticides in the foods. We've got, you know, hormones going straight into the water. Do I need to keep going? You get the point, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that we are living in a time where absolutely, I mean, just to even recap, there's a lot stacked, you know, against women. And for those who are looking kind of in their next chapter, or their next season of life, a new breakup, a new iteration of themselves, maybe reinventing themselves, you know, I love that you kind of explain the difference between the feminine and the masculine roles and the expectations. There's one thing that you talk about, which is the masculine clamshell. And I came across this and we're like, all right, let's spill the chai on this. What do you mean by that?
Okay, if you think about a clamshell, it's this protective, kind of a buffering, positive ownership type of energy and dynamic that it has with that soft muscle on the inside. I usually use the example of a pearl as opposed to that soft muscle on the inside. You could really use either. Let's go with pearl, because it's the one I'm always talking about, right? So if the feminine is like a pearl inside of that clamshell is holding and containing and protecting and sometimes nourishing what's inside of that shell. When the feminine has that strong masculine container is when it can come into its full power. And that full power for the feminine is, you know, things like receptivity. When a woman is in her power, she's completely open. That level of openness is what allows her to bring forth life. It enhances creativity massively. I mean, she just becomes like a vessel through which the universe flows in that state. Mm-hmm. As opposed to when she's without that clamshell, where there's an automatic contraction and you see a decrease in the creativity. You see an armoring in general. You see her creative centers and also energetic intuitive centers closing down so as to respond to a harsh environment.
Because she doesn't have that.
Exactly.
That clamshell. She has to become it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I realize that I'm on slippery territory here, because those of us who are living now are a byproduct of, you know, the feminist movement, which obviously existed for a very powerful reason. Anybody who doesn't think so should just go back to the 1950s. But still, I mean, we need to be talking about some of the detriments that came with that movement. And this is a big one of them, is that we've lost the truth about the way that femininity exists because of the amount of pain that so many of the women in those eras were in relative to men. They were like, they moved towards, we don't need you. Period. The end. We can exist without you. And that is not true.
Right.
So really, you know, once we get past this little immature phase of sticking our tongues out at each other, I feel like we're headed towards this time period where, you know, men are going to be coming fully into their masculine power and women are coming into their full feminine power. And these are very different types of energies. That's what I wish people would accept, right? Mm-hmm. When we're talking about, you know, the feminine needing masculine to exist, it doesn't make the feminine weak. It just is an element of feminine need. It's an element like fire is and water is. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't compare them, like which one wins, you know. They're two completely different creatures. They're two completely different elements. And obviously, the enhancement of life is down to both of them being able to express in the way that they both contribute to life here on Earth, or to a relationship, if you want to go there.
Right. And how can we kind of bring back this I guess I'm kind of thinking about this like homeostasis between like the masculine and the feminine. And maybe for somebody listening to this, they're like, okay, Teal, you're saying I need to kind of, you know, we're all talking about, you know, how do we get into our soft girl era? And I'm talking about this a lot on the Brave Table. And, you know, much of what you're speaking to is allow yourself to soften.
Yep.
And now is that going to, for our listeners and our watchers on YouTube, is that going to attract the man? How are we going to invite, or how can we invite or reignite that masculine without emasculating, which obviously is part of the toxic femininity, maybe?
You know, what's interesting about this conversation is I don't have this conversation with women about how to invite men into the masculine. Can I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because masculine energy is the initiator. I am working primarily with men and then working with how women respond to those men. So it's in the response that I would want to target women and change women's behaviors. So if I'm working with a demographic of men and I'm saying, this is the way to show up and provide a container, these are the kinds of decisions you need to make if you really want to, you know, nourish a female to the point where she's safe with you and has bonded to you. If a man shows up in that way and a woman responds in a way that doesn't say yes to that, then we've got issues. So, you know, let's say that I'm working with women. I'm talking about if that man opens the door for you, you better take it. Stop, you know, pulling this crap of, well, what does that mean about how you see me?
Hmm.
I mean, one of the things I like to tell women is that if a man offers me a hand, I will never turn it down, period, the end, because the exact type of behavior that is balanced and healthy for us.
Yeah, and it feels good.
Hell yeah, it does. And not only that, like for men, one of the deepest needs is for what they give to be something that is received in a way where they are valued. So even if it's not a woman looking at him dead in the eyes and being like, oh my God, I love it, sweetie. You know, if a man takes his energy and gives in some way, which is a very natural thing for a man to do, right? Providership.
Right.
That's very natural for them. If they do that and they even see in your body language, oh, that's a yes for me, then it's an instantaneous hit of self-worth for a man. What we are doing right now as women is we're literally stripping men of their place in this world. Mm-hmm. And this is where I get a little bit nervous because, you know, right now as women, we're in this position where we get to ask ourselves, are we going to bring this into the healthy space, or are we going to swing the pendulum and put men in the position we felt like we were in for thousands of years?
Mm. Seems like it's going that way.
It is going that way. And we are going to suffer for it.
And you and I...
Oh, and the governments will love it.
Why do you say that?
I had to sneak that in. Why? Because without men, there's no warriors. Without men, there's no protection. We are a completely controllable society. Right now, we are not raising men to be in their proper position within society. And that's a very, very, very vulnerable position for countries to be in, whole countries. I don't know if you need to watch the millennial generation or the Gen Z generation to pray for us if another country decides to invade.
Mm-hmm. You're just, yeah. I mean, you're just dropping all the gems today. I love it. And this kind of brings me to us both being moms, and we both have sons.
Oh.
How does that now relate to how, and for a lot of the moms out there as well, you know, as I kind of started to peel back how I want to start raising my son, and what do I want to do and what do I not want to do, what is your take on the raising of a son?
I have so many takes on it. Well, you know, first and foremost, I think it's smart for us to raise our sons with the idea that they will be men one day. These may be our little babies, but very quickly they're going to grow out of that. And they're going to be in a position of serious power on a physical level, on a mental level, on an emotional level. I would hope that we would raise them to do the very best with the power that they have. I am teaching my son personally to really stick to his own North Star of understanding a lot of the things that I'm teaching him about, you know, masculine, feminine dynamics and how to show up in a relationship, regardless of what he's getting from society or what he's getting from even individual little girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of my time explaining and over-explaining situations that he finds himself in. What I've noticed, though, is that like if you don't strip a child of their confidence, they're pretty good at understanding that the world is not a perfect place and that they're going to have to, you know, anchor themselves to that North Star, regardless of what influences are, you know, kind of hitting them and from where. Yeah, there have been more than a few circumstances where you almost see the plight of moms coming through the daughters in the age where he is right now. My son's 14, so he's coming into his,
oh wow,
his hormones. And, you know, he's at that age where the difference between the girls in class versus the boys is like light years, you know. The girls were like, winter, if you had to get trapped on a desert island with just one of us, which one would it be? He's like, I don't know, everyone. No, no, just one of us. You know, these types of games. And he, you know, the boys are still like,
they don't know.
I've got legs, you know.
It's fascinating because I have a daughter as well, and my daughter is two, and it's just her maturity is that of, you know, my son when he was like 6 months old and she's 2.5. You know, it's just, it's wild. But I do deeply resonate with, like, there is this responsibility for our sons. And, you know, my husband and I, we were actually talking about it not too long ago of, he's five. In the last 5 years, I can't tell you of a Pixar movie that was made for like strong, healthy boys.
No, we're killing boys.
I'm like, where?
We're killing them on purpose. So we're swinging the pendulum.
This is nuts because it's crazy. I'm like, okay, there's Moana. Okay, I get it. Moana, fine. You know, Brave, fine. But Frozen, fine. But I'm like, where in the last 5 years we have not seen a like with a strong protagonist
you're not gonna get it right now. What we're celebrating is feminizing men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do we undo that, especially when what is happening, even the cartoons that they're watching,
by showing them the dysfunction? You celebrate their masculinity. You give them opportunities to step into their masculinity at the same time as explaining the profound illness of the society that they live in right now. It's not a problem to explain to our sons that they're coming into a world, it's the opposite of gaslighting, that they're coming into a world where there's such a backlash because of thousands of years worth of dynamics between men and women, where men right now are not really in favor. Mm. They already feel it. So then what should I make that mean, right? What should I make that mean for my son? What should I tell him about that? For me, I'm sitting down with him and I'm explaining to him, you know, what masculine traits are, you know, and celebrating him for those. Mm-hmm. Explaining that with any trait, whether it's masculine or feminine, it can go into, you know, essentially shadow, or it can go into this light form. So let's say, you know, a man is a real initiating energy. They tend to be more in the action orientation, right? They're the ones who like to step into a position and exert power, right? And all of those things are profoundly powerful traits. To the negative side of that, if we start to let go of our care for others, then that trait falls into things like tyranny. So what's the problem? Is the problem like power? No, the problem's not power. Problem is the inability to take others as a part of the self. I'm telling you right now that men would have no issues whatsoever from women if what they had done exerting their power across this universe was to take women as a part of themselves so that they considered their best interests and acted in their best interests. You would not see any of the society you see today if that had happened. But it didn't. It was just so. But I mean, I want people to understand that up until this point, we haven't really seen in alignment masculinity. That's what people don't get. They're like, we've seen enough of masculinity. This time has come for femininity. I'm like, no. Back up. We have never seen feminine in its power, and we have never seen masculine in its power. That has not happened yet. Both have been in the shadow, you know? For femininity, it's like, you know, weakness and manipulation, right? And for men, it's like tyranny and you know, greed and things like this. We're just seeing the shadow expressions of both genders. So what I'm trying to do with my son is to enroll him in the picture I just gave you.
Yeah.
That as people, we are coming out of the dark ages more and more and more each generation. And as we come out of the dark ages, we have to figure out what that positive expression of our, you know, specific energies are. And I have to tell you, it's been pretty impressive because recently, since my son has started to go into this puberty phase, he started to initiate containment without me even really directly teaching him how to do it. All of the women in our group have been noticing it, and it's just like overnight, you know? And I'm loving it. And I've had real, real serious conversations with the rest of the women in our social group where I'm like, if he does this, say yes.
Oh my goodness. It's crazy how fast it goes. And it's, I never used to, when people used to tell me that, it's going to go by so fast. Oh, and I'm like,
it's terrifying. This creature that came out of my body is now taller than me. I'm like,
it's insane. Step into the fullest, most expressed, and expanded version of yourself. One that's not afraid to shine your light. One that's truly embodied and is able to fully feel in order to heal. Hey friends, guess what? Doors are open. Highest Self Institute, our 3-month long-awaited embodiment certification, is
finally open, where you can learn in depth over 3 months how to fully be in your body, not your mind, embrace your emotions as messengers, and how to be in the fullest expression of you. This is our 3-month embodiment certification. Maybe you're desiring a place to be fully seen, fully accepted, and fully met, or perhaps add to your skills as a coach, healer, or therapist, or maybe you've been on the lookout for a safe place to allow your fullest expression to come alive without any judgment. Head over to highestselfinstitute.com, highestselfinstitute.com for more information. Classes begin May 21st. I will see you there. Now back to the show.
Okay, well, so let's get into motherhood because, okay. I mean, as we're obviously talking about it, and I came across this, you know, this post of yours around the, and it was, you know, the number one secret to being a good mother. I don't know if you
remember
that.
What did I say that day?
Well, it was something along the lines of, you know, not committing emotional suicide.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But what did you mean by that?
What I meant by that is that, you know, we've been talking about women coming out of these detrimental patterns, and there is definitely a pattern of self-sacrifice with mothers who have stepped into motherhood. Now, I know that I'm treading on thin ice here because women are in so much pain about their role as mothers and about what's expected of them and about, you know, all kinds of things. But saying that I understand that and treading out on that thin ice, one of the worst things you can ever do for your children is to give yourself up. Because it's a lie and a myth that you even can. Anybody who grew up underneath a self-sacrificing mother will tell you the hell of that condition. It's that you grew up with somebody who was resentful. You grew up with somebody who dreamed of something else and was, you know, essentially coping with her life. And because of that, even though she may have been there all day, every day doing things, it's that feeling of somebody cooking for you when they don't really want to be cooking for you, or like, you know, driving you to your soccer matches when they're dreaming of a life they could have had. And so many women cope with that condition of self-sacrifice by committing emotional suicide, which is to just, they turn themselves off. They pull their navigation system off of their own North Star. Mm-hmm. They don't do things which fill up their own energy centers. And so it's like they're perpetually giving, yet they have nothing to give. And it's a state of walking death is what it is. So then all of a sudden, because they base their entire life around their children and their children's needs and where they needed to be driven to and blah, 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 it's like the children reach a phase where they're going off into society as adults and mom doesn't know what to do. Oh my gosh, who am I? Right. I don't even know who I am anymore. I don't even know what my life is about anymore. I don't even know what I like. My entire existence has revolved around these children. And not only that, we have taught the little kids in the family, most especially the girls, we have taught them to do the very same thing. So it's just rinse, repeat, you know?
And this is how we're passing on our generational legacies and our traumas.
Yep.
Yeah. And I love that you are just breaking this down for us because it is probably one of the things that we hear about the most in our community is the mom guilt is to, you know, go after your dreams, but then at the expense of what? Yep. And then if you're sacrificing yourself, then you have the resentment with your partner. How to navigate that?
My answer is going to be a funny one for you. Mm-hmm. What we need as people, both men and women, is not possible within the context of the structure of society that we've created. What I mean by that is that it's only when we start moving back towards the concept of very strong community and further than that tribe that we're going to be able to answer these questions. Because right now, when women think about, you know, going and making their life more about themselves, the question is, where do the kids go? Mm-hmm. This would not be a problem if we were living in a tribal setting. The children naturally who grow up in tribe, they have the perception that they have multiple parents. So they're like running from this caregiver to that caregiver. And they feel very nourished and resourced, and so do the parents. Right now, I mean, people want me to have a different answer, but I literally can't do that. I can't give you a different answer. We need to be 10 times more resourced in order to make this work. Why? Because when a mom goes, you know what, I'm going to make my life much more about me and what I need and want so that when I'm with you kids, I have me to give you, right? The question is, what happens with the child's needs during that time? Mm. We shouldn't be putting the pressure on the kids to allow space for us. That's where this starts to get really, really dark. Mm. what should be happening and what we need to make happen in whatever creative way we can is to create a situation where when we're not the ones with the kids, they're with somebody else. And when they're not the ones with the kids, they're with somebody else. And I'm not talking transient babysitters that we pay to watch them. Mm. I'm talking cherished people who are a fundamental element of their life across years.
That you're doing life with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because coming from my Asian backgrounds, Filipino and Indian, and of course my husband is from India, we were just back in India for a very long stretch of time, for about 3 weeks. And we saw, and he, you know, grew up in a very, it's called a joint family with like 23 members of the family. And it's very customary for even a lot of my cousins, they just grew up in that way. So the aunts are taking care of all the kids and one of the moms is making dinner for everybody and the other one is maybe working and, you know, and they're just taking turns doing the thing. And it was never an issue.
Yep.
And so, but
that is 1,000 times more healthy. See, right now, what we can do is we can dissect and generalize about every culture, right? You've got enmeshment patterns in Asia that are really, really unhealthy. However, what they have managed to adhere to is a much more healthy template for how we are supposed to thrive in group. So it's like, you know, what we're meant to be doing is essentially taking the best of each culture. What you're watching within those types of societies is something which humans desperately need regardless of where they are. And right now, you know, it's the white culture, honestly, that's the most out of alignment with this one. So,
yeah, it's a big one because it just puts so much pressure on the parents and mostly the moms. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay. And I kind of want to get into, because you talk a lot about the breakdowns in friendships and in relationships. Okay. And lately, we have been diving into kind of how do we have more brave relationships and to even be able to perhaps repair and reconcile when either we've done wrong or when the other has done wrong. How do we start like healing these repairs in our relationships, whether it's love and or friendships?
We have to get down to what's real and vulnerable. If you want me to just make it really super simple. I mean, the only real healing is at that level where it's not about the surface. It's about the why. The why is what brings you underneath to what the actual issue is and then what actually needs to be addressed, therefore. And then we practice bringing that to the other, but not in a manner of like, I'm accusing you of this and you need to change to conform to how I want you to be. It's more like, this is a very vulnerable element of me and I want you to understand what it would take to make a relationship work with me and I want to know the same from you and now I'm going to put it in your hands. But that means that as people, we need to drop below this surface way that we've been having relationships forever. I don't know if you know this movie, but you got it. I was on the airplane yesterday and I watched it for the first time. I think it's called Crazy Stupid Love or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I
what'd you
hate
think?
That movie.
Not good.
I hate that movie.
I mean, it was okay.
Why do I hate that movie? Because it demonstrates, probably why it's a good movie, it demonstrates exactly the issue with relationships. I could not believe the conversation that happens when his wife, right in the very beginning of the movie, she says, I want a divorce. And then he doesn't want to talk about it. And then she tries to talk about it with him and he jumps out the car. I'm like, okay. Yeah, this is human relationships right now. Like we've had problems. It's obvious they've had problems in the relationship for years. Has anybody brought it up? Of course not, right? So we've been having relationships that are false. And we've primarily been maintaining the longevity of our relationships through dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Dysfunctional adaptation. Well, that's a great story. So we've got to quit it, basically. We've got to quit it. We've got to commit to having real relationships. And the part that's scary about that is it entails and implies change. Because people are not static. I really wish we were sometimes, but we're not
no
static.
Change. Yeah.
And because of that, it means that a relationship will be evolving and evolving and evolving and evolving. And guess what? You can't get out of that. It doesn't matter whether you are into awareness work or into self-growth or, you know, just a person who just wants the basic stuff in life and doesn't want to think deeper. Sorry, you get into a relationship, you don't have a choice.
Right. We're not doing relationships on the top of a mountain meditating by ourselves.
No. No. And you're going to change. You're going to change. The other person's going to change. The question is, can you stay on top of it when things are very small enough to change together? or when you reach that point where it's very obvious that because of the differences in what you want in life, you're going to go separate ways. Are you going to do that in a conscious way together? Or are you just going to be like, you know what? I realized we did this for 10 years, but now you're my new enemy. This should end in blood. You know?
So what would be like the first steps in helping somebody repair, whether it's a friend relationship or let's take love since we've been talking about it?
Well, I feel like for repair, like the very first step is to acknowledge that something occurred, right? That takes a lot of bravery in and of itself because, you know, we are naturally wanting to avoid conflict.
Right. We're like, okay, no, it wasn't a big deal. It's okay.
Yeah. The opposite of that. Okay, so a rupture occurred. I'm feeling insecure in this relationship. It doesn't feel good anymore. There's a kind of a rub or a bad blood type of a feeling. I don't want this to be here anymore. So what I would encourage people to do is to get down to that layer of vulnerability that's underneath whatever charged emotions that are there. For most of us, when we go through a rupture, we're in some kind of an anger, right? Anger is a protector. It's not real good when we try to go and initiate repair with somebody or to get repair from somebody. It's not real good to approach them with anger. I know this is an art form, not an exact science, but underneath that anger is whatever it is that we're protecting. So it would be really smart for people on their own terms to essentially drop into, okay, my anger is protecting me right now. What is it that this is protecting? What is it that hurts so bad about this? What is it that's so scary? And once you've essentially got that answer as to what is scary and what is hurting, you bring that to the other person. Having some idea in your mind of how to direct them, because it's not a very good idea to go into conflict resolution without some idea of what you're needing instead. Mm-hmm. Especially with men, by the way, because a lot of men are like, just tell me what you want me to do. What do you want me to do?
Right. They want to know. Yeah. So you're saying don't come empty-handed.
Yeah. Don't ever come to that empty-handed. I don't feel like we should be in the passive state anyway. Like as people, for wanting to have good relationships, you can't just be in a passive state. It's weird to me mentally that we have this attitude towards relationships because we don't have that attitude towards dancing the tango. And that's essentially a very simplified version of what a relationship is. In order to dance a good tango, we have to be incredibly active, you know, communicating what we're needing to dance a good dance and, you know, adjusting ourselves. And it's this very active type deal. Okay, so you would be essentially figuring out what that vulnerability is, and then it's the vulnerability that you would bring to a person and communicate in that way. And I mean, hopefully you get yourself to the point where you can, if it's the other person who caused the rupture, you can be asking them their side of it. Because as we have all found out probably one too many times in our life, people have very different perspectives of what has happened in a given circumstance.
So true.
But I mean, what's really wrecking a relationship is what we make it mean. So I feel like we should be going out of our way to make sure that it means what we think it means before we spiral down the path of, oh, and Cheryl doesn't care. You know? Well, you don't know, actually. So after essentially both of you going back and forth with, like, you know, this truth that you have, the goal of any type of a rupture is to settle on some way to make it better, some way to make it different.
So on both sides.
On both sides.
Yeah.
Usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is possible to cause a one-sided rupture.
Yeah, and what if the other side isn't open to a repair?
Then you can't work with that. Mm. You know, what's interesting is that no matter how many interviews I do about relationships, the thing that nobody wants to accept, and I understand why, is that it takes two to make a relationship work. It takes one, potentially, to break it, but it takes two to make it work. So
if they're not willing...
If they're not willing, that's it. All you can do is maximize the chance of their willingness through your own conduct. That's it. That's what makes relationships so incredibly terrifying.
This is gold. This is gold. Wow. And I feel like we are now almost at our time, almost at our spilling the chai section.
Ooh.
So yes.
That sounds entertaining.
It is a little entertaining where I ask you quite a few things, and you can spill the chai on your take on it.
Okay.
As long as you want or as short as you want.
You just gave me like a little sass look just then. Like that.
This conversation has honestly been so enlightening. And I mean, for our audience, I know you have something for them to kind of link back to which we'll link in the show notes. But can you tell us of any upcoming events, things where people are, I know they're going to run after and follow you and all of your offerings?
Yeah. So if you go to tealswan.com, that's where everything's compiled. And we've got an events section in our website where you can follow where I'm going.
Amazing. You're such a light. And all right, here we go. Okay. How would you describe toxic masculinity?
Any masculine trait opposing the best interests of others rather than acting as a benefit for the best interests of others.
Are you a dog person or a cat person?
Dog.
How many dogs do you have?
I have two, but I love cats too. But yeah, I'm like, if I had to pick, for sure, dogs. Okay.
3D or 5D?
3D.
Current mood of motherhood?
Trepidatious.
That's a good word. Favorite nervous system or grounding ritual?
Epsom salt baths.
And how would you describe what bravery is?
I would describe bravery as going towards something that induces fear with your fear. Most people define bravery as bulldozing through fear. Yeah, that's going to get you in some serious trouble. So whenever you're facing a situation that it brings that fear up, you have to essentially carry that fear forward with you rather than let the fear paralyze you and stop you from taking that action, which implies that bravery makes you a risk taker, right? It implies that you have to take action even though you are afraid to.
And one word that describes the season of life for you?
Let's go with restructuring.
This is good. Amazing. Thank you for pouring your love, your light, your wisdom for us at the Brave Table. Just want to honor everything that you've done, and you're such an oracle. So thank you for sitting with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time on the Brave Table. All right, friends, we made it onto the other side. She is absolutely phenomenal. And I'm going to link her website in the show notes, but you can also follow her everywhere at Teal Swan Official. That's T-E-A-L Swan Official on Instagram. She's on TikTok. She's on YouTube. That's everywhere at Teal Swan. And she's also tealswan.com for any and all of her podcast episodes and all of her programs. And for the free guided meditations that she has, the special gift, you can go ahead to tealswan.com/present, and we will link it in the show notes as well. We have also linked three other episodes to go a little bit deeper in your healing journey. So I hope you enjoy those. And don't forget to be just a little bit more brave this week. Share this with a friend, a colleague, a bestie who could benefit from having these brave conversations in their lives. Thank you so, so much. And I hope you have an amazing day, amazing week, and amazing rest of this evening. I will see you soon.